Before we do the actual Tara practice, I want to talk a little bit about who or what Tara is and why we do the practice, because I think that's important for you to understand. So Tara, if we can look at Tara in different ways, okay? Sometimes we can look at Tara as a person, you know, who started off like us and practiced the path and gained the realizations. There's even a story of somebody who became Tara, which I'll tell you in a minute. But we can also think of Tara as the embodiment of enlightened qualities. And in that case, Tara isn't so much a person as she is an embodiment or a symbol of different qualities. A third way we can see Tara is as the Buddha we're going to become. Because when we do that, then we get a clearer idea of what our own potential is and where we want to head in our own spiritual practice. So let me talk a little bit about those three in relationship to Tara. Okay, so seeing Tara as a person. So there's a story in one of the scriptures about a princess named Yeshigawa, which means the moon of exalted wisdom. And she was a very great Buddhist practitioner, had great bodhicitta and compassion for sentient beings. And before she ate breakfast every morning, she would liberate so many sentient beings. And she wouldn't eat lunch until she had liberated so many more sentient beings. And she wouldn't eat dinner until she had liberated so many others. Okay, her life was completely dedicated to working for the benefit of sentient beings. So she practiced like this, and some of the monks of her time heard about her very diligent practice and came to her and said, "Wow, you know, you're a very dedicated practitioner. You have a lot of wisdom and compassion. You should really pray to be reborn as a man in your next life, because then you can practice better." And she looked at them, and I think she was a lot politer than I would be. But she said, "Forget it, fellas." Okay. So like I said, she was polite. She said, "Well, thank you very much, but I'm going to remain in a woman's body until I attain full enlightenment." And that's what she did. Okay, and so she practiced all the bodhisattva stages as a woman and attained full enlightenment as a woman. In actual fact, an enlightened being doesn't have any sex. An enlightened being does not really belong to one gender or the other, because our mind isn't male or female, is it? Our mind is formless. Our mind isn't made of atoms and molecules. Okay? And it's our mind that principally becomes a Buddha. We only label gender, male and female, based on the arrangement of atoms and molecules in our body. Don't we? Isn't that the whole way the distinction between boy and girl is made? Is just how your atoms and molecules are arranged in the body? Is there any other way? Are you inherently a man? Are you inherently a woman? No. Yeah. Okay. So it just happens to be on what kind of body you have for a particular period of time. But our consciousness is not male or female. Okay. So an enlightened being is not male or female. Okay. An enlightened being may manifest, yeah, in a male or female body, but they do that for our benefit because our minds are so obscured that we can't communicate with the enlightened mind of a Buddha directly. Okay? We instead communicate with an enlightened mind through symbols. Okay? And the physical appearance is a symbol, okay, of a Buddha's attainment. So Buddhas sometimes appear as females, they sometimes appear as males. In fact, they're neither. Okay? And I think this is very important to understand because sometimes we make very strong identities of whatever gender we belong to. Okay? I am a woman, therefore I am blah, 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 blah. I am a man, therefore I am blah, 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 blah. Okay? And we create these very rigid identities that are actually very constrictive and confining. And in addition, we develop a lot of stereotypes. Okay, about what women are like and about what men are like. And I think these stereotypes are very confining, you know. They make for very restricted social roles, and definitely they can adversely affect our self-confidence in spiritual practice. Okay, so that's why I think it's important to remember we're not men and we're not women. And throughout this beginningless cycle of samsara, we've been born as both at different times. So if you're a woman, you have been born as a man before. And if you're a man this life, you've been born as a woman before. And who knows what in the world we're going to be reborn next life. Okay? So these are not fixed things at all. So it's not good to develop a very restricted identity for yourself based on that or any kind of stereotype about other people. Okay? So in appearing, okay, appearing in a female body, okay, Tara is illustrating certain qualities. The Lama Yeshe, one of my first Dharma teachers, he used to say that, you know, many women have very quick energy. Okay? I see that sometimes at the Abbey, because we sit down at the kitchen table, we talk about something, we decide, and we do it. Okay? And so Tara is, by appearing in a female body, she's showing maybe this general, I don't know, female trait of having quick energy. Yeah, being able to see something and act. I mean, if you're a mom, you don't sit around and philosophize, do you? If your kid's choking on something, you get it out of his throat. You don't sit there and go, you know, you act. You're quick energy. You know what needs to be done and you do it. Okay? So that's what Tara is showing. Yeah. That kind of very quick, clean, clear energy. She's appearing in a green body. Yeah. Because green is the color of growth, isn't it? When things grow, they're green. So, in Singapore, you don't see it very much because you don't have seasons. But at the Abbey, springtime is like quite an incredible thing because the winter was all white with the snow. Okay. So spring comes and like, whoa, everything's green. Yeah. So green, you get a feeling of, success. You get a feeling of abundance, of growth, of movement. Okay. So her green color represents that. That kind of success in our spiritual practice, a growing, okay? She's decorated by jewels, okay? Now, most of us, whenever we wear jewelry, it's because we're trying to look better in an attempt to get people to like us, Okay. Oh, if I wear nice jewelry, then they'll think I'm beautiful. If I wear expensive jewelry, then they'll think I'm rich. You know, I have nicer jewelry than somebody else. See my ring. You know, and we get into all sorts of kind of, you know, ego trips. Yeah. Tara is wearing ornaments, but it's not with that kind of thought. Okay. Her ornaments symbolize the six far-reaching attitudes. So they represent generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joyous effort, meditative stabilization, and wisdom. Okay. So instead of being adorned by something external, she is inwardly adorned by these six practices, these six far-reaching attitudes. You know, it's quite cute. Sometimes I'm invited to high schools in the States, to secondary schools, you know, to give a talk. You know, they want me to talk to the Asian history class or the woman's study class or something like that. And so I usually, the kids are usually very interested in my robes and my hair, you know, because I don't kind of look like the model in the magazines that you're supposed to look like. And so, you know, I explain where we wear robes because it's a uniform and it symbolizes to us and other people that, you know, we've made a certain commitment to spiritual practice, you know. And we cut off our hair, symbolizing that we want to cut off ignorance, anger, and attachment. And I say we also cut off our hair because our hair is a cause of a lot of vanity. You know, we always want to fix our hair, don't we? And this pertains to men and women. Yeah, the guys, when they don't have hair, then they do all this stuff to make their hair grow. You know, and now there's beauty shops for men and women. You know, and you worry about, should I part my hair on this side or should I this side? And if you have straight hair, you want it curly. If you have curly hair, you want to make it straight. If you have dark hair, you want to dye it light. If you have light hair, you want to dye it dark. Okay? We're always thinking, if I look different than how I look, I'll look better. Okay? So we wear jewelry and we go to the store and we buy all these different clothes. And we try the clothes on and how do I look? This and that. You know, and we're so concerned about, and we talk about it with our friends. Oh, how do you like my new outfit? How do you like this jewelry? Did you see what so-and-so was wearing? How did you like their hair? You know, you talk about this. Everybody gets quite excited. Yeah. So I tell the students, you know, I'm not interested in any of that. I think that's a total waste of time. Why? Because I don't want anybody to like me because of what I look like. Because what I look like is not who I am. And I'm not always going to look this way. You know, I'm in the process of getting old. Yeah, we all are. And if our self-esteem hinges on how we look, then the aging process is going to be terrible. You know, we're going to feel like, oh, my life has no meaning because I'm ugly. You know, who wants to grow old feeling like that? What a tragedy. So I tell the students, you know, I don't want anybody to like me because of how I look. I'm not interested in being beautiful on the outside. I want to be beautiful on the inside. So I shave my hair. I wear these clothes because that aids me in my spiritual practice so that I can become beautiful on the inside. So you have all these teenagers and they hear this and it's like they've never heard anybody talk like this before. They just look at me. Really? You don't care what you look like? You know, really? You think that people will like you if you don't look good? And I say, well, I hope so. And if they just like me because of how I look, basically I don't want to be friends with them. Because as soon as I don't look that way, we won't have a friendship anymore. Yeah, I want people who are friends because of what's in here. So I want to make myself beautiful on the inside. So they're totally shocked. So it's kind of, you know, like when Tara's wearing jewels, she's not trying to make herself beautiful on the outside. Yeah, when you're an enlightened being, you don't care beans about what you look like. Yeah, her adornments are representing her inner beauty. Okay, because the practices of generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joyous effort, meditative stabilization, wisdom, these are inner practices that make us beautiful on the inside. So they manifest as the bracelets, the anklets, the necklaces, the crown, all these things that she's adorned with. Okay, now she's sitting in a particular hand gesture too, and these also symbolize certain qualities of the enlightened mind. Okay, so if you look, the right side of her body is much more extended and her left side is more tucked in, more restrained, okay? Her right leg is stretched out, okay? You can see it's like she's about to get off of her lotus seat. Yeah, she's stepping out. Yeah, her right hand is reaching out. Yeah, and the gesture of giving realizations. So all this indicates the compassion side of the path. Okay, sometimes it's called the method or conduct side of the path. And that's where we do the bodhisattva practices to benefit sentient beings. We reach out to be of benefit and service. So that's symbolizing her right leg outstretched. She's going to step off of her lotus into our very confused world in order to benefit us. She's reaching out her hand, you know, so that we can take it, so that she can lead us to enlightenment. Yeah. This is very important symbology. Okay, I mean, there's Tara kind of reaching out her hand to us, and we go, you know, I'm really busy today. I'll hold hands with you later, Tara. You know, I'm too busy. I have to, you know, I'm going out with my friends and I have my schoolwork and I'm too busy making money. No time for Dharma practice. But, you know, Tara, you're infinite. You'll be around in a few centuries. I'll come back. That shows how totally foolish we are. Yeah. Who wants to stay in cyclic existence for a few more centuries? Yeah. I mean, we only think like that because we haven't really understood what a horror cyclic existence is. When we really understand, boy, our hands out there ready to, you know, have Tara pull us out of samsara. Okay. And it's not like Tara pulls us out with her hand. Again, that's a symbol. Yeah, if all it took was an enlightened being to pull us out like this, and, you know, we would have hopefully all been liberated by now. But the Buddhas help us. Yeah, they lead us, they guide us by teaching the Dharma. That's the principal way that they lead us to enlightenment. And so that's why it's so important on our side to come to teachings, to come to retreats, to make an effort to go to where our teachers are. Yeah, that when we do that, you know, that's us reaching our hand out to Tara's hand so that Tara can help us and guide us. Because if we don't do our part, how are the enlightened beings going to benefit us? Okay? It's like the story I told Was it last night or the night before? About somebody who was very sick and I wanted to teach him a practice. Remember? And he was too busy. And then later when he was dying, he wanted me to come. So it's the same idea, you know, why we have the time we need to follow the teachings. Tara's hand is there, but we need to see the importance of the Dharma and to really value that and to do whatever we need to do to receive teachings and have the conditions to practice. Okay. People, you know, always say to me, they always say, oh, but I'm so busy, La. You know, I don't have time. Yeah, please come to Singapore and teach. So, you know, I come to Singapore to teach. I'm traveling 24 hours. I'm exhausted. My body doesn't know where I am. I get here. And then the people say, oh, how nice to see you, but I can't come to teachings because I'm going out with my friends because I have this family dinner because blah, 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 blah. But please come to Singapore again. You know, and I know they're sincere in inviting me, but I just kind of have to scratch my head and say, yeah. Whereas there's other people who live very far away from the Abbey, and they get on a plane and they come to the Abbey because they want to hear teachings and they want to do practice. Okay, so they're willing to put themselves out there. Yeah, they're not spending their money on clothes and jewelry and movies. They're going to get an air ticket to go to where they can listen to teachings and to do some serious practice. Okay? So it's really up to us whether we reach out and take Tara's hand. Or if we say, well, Tara, I'm busy. I'm holding hands with my boyfriend instead. You know? Okay? Then, the left side of Tara's body, okay, it's more tucked in, yeah? Right side's extended, left is tucked in, yeah? Her left leg is tucked in, yeah? You see it's close, folded in towards her body. So that symbolizes that she has control of her internal energies, okay? Her left hand is by her heart with the thumb and ring finger touching, and the other three fingers extended. This is the gesture of the three jewels, okay, or the refuge, yeah? Because we have the three fingers upright, our Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and the two fingers that are touching are the unity of wisdom and compassion. And that's against her body, okay? So she's sitting like that. And so we see, you know, the left side is more tucked in, more composed. The right side is more active, reaching out. What that's showing is, as an enlightened being, we want to cultivate both aspects of our personality. Okay? We want to have the internal control of controlling our own energies, of having very deep refuge, ourself, and trust in the three jewels. And we also want to be active and do something to benefit sentient beings, to improve society, to contribute to the welfare of the world. Okay? So it's showing us in our practice, we need to cultivate both. If we just do the left side and we go too far inwards, then we may gain a lot of realizations, but we can't share them with other people. On the other hand, if we're too busy being active in the world and we don't spend enough time being spiritually grounded, then we get exhausted and our own practice ceases to develop. So I think, you know, this combination is quite important. It's telling us something. There's many people in society who have so many good hearts. And I'm sure many of you are sitting here in this room who in your career, you're doing jobs that directly benefit others. or maybe you do some volunteer work that is of direct benefit to others. And that's really wonderful, you know, that either as a part of your career or part of volunteer work, you are actively benefiting other people or animals in society. But at the same time you're benefiting, it's important to have your own spiritual center and to be spiritually grounded. There's an expression in America, it's called compassion fatigue. And what this refers to is sometimes people do a lot of service work out of compassion to benefit others, and after a while they get tired. And they find they're getting angry, or they're just exhausted, okay? And they lose their inspiration to act out of compassion. And this happens frequently when people don't take the time to maintain that balance in their life, okay? So we have to have the active side of service, okay? Like the right side of the body. But we need to maintain our own spiritual center and make sure that we go on retreat, that we listen to teachings, that we do a daily meditation practice, that we work on our mind. We need to do both of those things to stay in balance. And if we do, then we can continue doing both of them without compassion fatigue, okay? So we'll be able to continue our own internal development, and we'll be able to continue doing our beneficial work at the same time in tandem without going to one extreme or the other. Okay? And I think this way of practicing can be very helpful to us. Yeah? We do some work in the world, we live our lives, and then when we sit down to meditate, we use the experiences we have in our lives to check up on how our mind is doing and how to practice the Dharma. And if we do that, then the Dharma teachings are not abstract, you know, things to us, but we're directly relating them to our life. Okay. And then when we do our practice, we get our mind quiet. We work through a lot of our trouble and confusion and anger and attachment. And then when we go out to benefit again, you know, the benefit we give others is really what they need, and it's in harmony with the situation. Okay, so we want to do both those things together. Tara's left hand, you know, she's holding the stem of a lotus. Yeah, you can see. And the lotus, there's actually three lotuses. There's a bud, there's a blooming lotus, and then there's a fully open lotus. So the lotus at those three stages represents the Buddhas of the past, the present, and the future. Okay, so the Buddhas of the past are the fully opened ones, the Buddhists of the present are the opening ones, the Buddhas of the future are the buds.